Welcome to Beer and Business. You've turned into the best podcast on the interwebs. We drop crafty knowledge on you every week about business, but we have fun and keep it real. And yes, we talk about beer. Because it's beer. So sit back, crack open a cold one, because learning is better with barley and hops. And now, introducing our hosts, the full-bodied philosophers. If he was to pat you on the back, you'd list it on your resume. It's Jake Mullins. And his beard never gets cold. It just sits there, staying frosty, waiting for him. Ladies and gentlemen, John Winnie.
Folks, welcome back to Beer and Business. Today is Wednesday, December 11th. This is Jake.
And this is Darren.
And today on the show, folks, we've been teasing him for weeks. He's here. Cliff Enico, he's joining us from the tropical warm climate of Connecticut. Cliff, welcome to the show.
Real pleasure, guys.
And I'm so excited to have you on the show today, Cliff, because you have helped thousands, maybe millions of people understand how to start businesses, protect their assets, and,
and no find, matter how many times and, you practice that line, it just doesn't come out right. It's not.
I'm sorry. Did I put too much emphasis on the ass? I probably did. And he also helps people find sustainable success. Cliff, you're a great guy. Hilarious, too, by the way. And, you know, happens to be one of the attorneys I like.
And smart as hell.
Well, thank you. My wife says I'm a legend in my own mind.
My wife doesn't say anything like that, but anything. So before we get down to business, Cliff, on this show, we got to drink some beer and we wish you were in the studio with us. We are drinking a delicious Jailhouse Brewing Mugshot IPA, which is a really bright, hoppy, delicious IPA.
Crisp.
Yeah, very Yummy. Crisp. And sorry you couldn't be here with us in person, Cliff, because this is a really good beer. I know you're more of a lager guy, but we love this one.
And well, if you listen, I mean, how more appropriate is it to have a lawyer on a show sponsored by Jailhouse Brewers? I mean, come on. I mean, you know.
Yeah, you've probably kept a few out of jail, huh?
That one, could you? No.
So guys, if you have not been to Jailhouse Brewing, you need to go. The tap room's amazing. You can take home up to a case of beer if you go. So I don't know about you, Darren, but first thing on my Christmas list is, you know, I mean, it's a 4-pack of Breakout Stout.
Well, only one?
I said the first thing, the second, third, fourth, fifth. They're all the same thing, but they're all on there. Yeah.
What do the kids say?
The kids think that I'm going to get beer under the tree.
Okay.
So good. If you have not been yet, please go. You can do your Christmas shopping and you can have a delicious beverage while you're there. Hampton, Georgia. You guys, please go out and visit them. They're a great supporter of the show, and their beer happens to be delicious.
Oh, it's fabulous. Fabulous. We love it. Thank you, Glenn, for all the great beers you brew.
Yes, sir. So Cliff, as we get into the interview here, I wanted to, first of all, let our audience know how I discovered you. I found you a few years ago, and I actually stumbled across you in one of your videos. It was on YouTube, and you were talking about a topic that was very relevant to me in starting a business. And I thought you were hilarious and super smart. So I started to look further into you and I found out you had written 16 books, and I watched more of your videos. I read several of your books, and I ultimately ended up becoming a client of yours as well. And I have learned a ton from you, and I'm really excited for our audience to learn from you as well. But here's where I wanted to start the interview with you. So I recently read a column that you wrote in 2016, and I had just read this for the first time a couple of months ago when we were prepping to have you on the show. And in 2016, you wrote this column called My Entrepreneur of the Year Nomination. And I don't want to spill the beans, but in that column, you wrote this real passionate chronicle about entrepreneurs. And it just rang so true in reading that there is no doubt you have this deep appreciation for entrepreneurs. You understand them. And I'm just curious, where did that come from?
Yeah, well, let's talk about that. I mean, just so for your listeners know, I do a weekly column. It's called Succeeding in Your Business, succeedinginyourbusiness.com. It's published at a couple of dozen newspapers around the country. I know I'm in Georgia somewhere, but most importantly, I'm on about 200 websites worldwide. This column is translated into four languages, and I get emails every week from entrepreneurs around the country with, you know, really crazy questions, and either I try to answer them or I get somebody who really knows what they're talking about to answer the question. But I remember this column very well. This was an email that I got right before Christmas in 2015 from someone who was a big fan, you know, like you. He'd seen my YouTube videos and all, and he just basically gave me the story of his life. This guy had started a retail business somewhere in the Midwest. I don't remember. I don't know who it is. He sent it from a generic email address. So I don't know who this person is by name, but it was just, he had gone through every horrible thing that could possibly happen to an entrepreneur. He tried to get investors involved. He had to hit up all his credit cards. He bought some property, and it turns out there was environmental problems that didn't show up during the due diligence. He had to break the contract, and there were lawsuits that broke out of that. He finally got the right space. His contractor screwed him over, charged him three times the estimate. One of his investors got cold feet and just wanted his money back, even though he didn't have the right to get it back. Everybody got spooked. His spouse ended up, you know, asking him to leave, you know, because they were just running up so much personal debt she couldn't take it anymore. I assume it was a she. It might have been a lady who wrote this. I don't know the gender of the person who wrote the email. But, you know, the spouse decided, the guy was living in a Motel 6. But the amazing thing was he still believed in the idea. He was still doing it. He was starting to get to the point where he was turning cash flow positive. The idea apparently did catch on in his local community, whatever it was. It may have been a brewery for all I know. But he's saying it's just starting to turn. I mean, it's taken me, you know, 5 years of hell to get to this point, you know, but I just want to let you know, I mean, this, I still believe in this idea. I still think it's going to happen. And no matter what happens, I'm still going to try to make this thing happen. You know, wishing you and your readers, a Merry Christmas. So I just took that email and I reprinted it verbatim. I took the whole thing verbatim. I put it in my column and I said, now, I don't know about you. Many of you are reading this column and you're thinking, my God, this guy is an idiot. This guy is a loser. Let me tell you something. This is my hero. This is my nomination for Entrepreneur of the Year, because this is what it's all about. A lot of people go into entrepreneurship with all kinds of crazy ideas about, you know, oh, it's going to be a hit. I'm going to be rich in no time. Everybody's going to love me. You know, things are going to go smoothly. You know, I can take whatever they throw at me, yada, yada. Here's somebody who has actually walked the walk and who's been through it all. To quote a famous old rock song from the 70s, sometimes you have to go through hell to get to heaven. For a lot of people don't realize that success very often requires a lot of sacrifice of your time, of your energy, of your money. You really got to really be willing to put yourself on the line in a way that very few people are willing to do. So to me, this is the question. That's why I say whoever this person was, and I hope that he or she is listening, because that person is my hero. That is the essence of what entrepreneurship is all about in this country.
Yeah, he sounds just like any entrepreneur to me. I mean, you started telling me that stuff. I'm like, yeah, yep. That sounds right. But that's
feels normal.
You guys know.
Yeah.
But that's one of your, when you were talking about qualities to run a business, that was like the number three quality. You got to have chutzpah.
Right? Yeah. So. You can call it what you will. I mean, I actually use an even stronger word, which a lot of people don't like. I talk about being ruthless in business. Now, That's an ugly word. When people think ruthless, they think, oh, sleazy, you know, unethical, whatever. That's not the case at all. Look this word up in a dictionary or on Wikipedia or something like that. It doesn't mean at all what you think it does. It doesn't mean unethical or sleazy or anything like that. It means heedless or reckless. Somebody who goes through life and they're so focused on what they want that they just don't care what the consequences are to themselves and to others. That's what a ruthless person really is. Someone who, when they see something, they get it no matter what it takes, no matter what happens to them, no matter what they have to do to get there, you know, short of breaking the law, of course. I mean, I'm a lawyer. I think I have to say that, you know, but you know, too many of us, you know, I have to play the role sometimes, guys. You know,
yeah,
I know it's hard. But seriously, so many of us are so hung up about what other people think of us and how people are going to perceive us. You know, oh, Mike, that's crazy. It's crazy. Why are you going to do that? That's crazy. No. You're going to lose everything, you know, yada, yada. You can't let that get in your way. If you truly believe in what you are doing and if you're truly passionate about the end result, you know, you will do things that will make other people say, my God, I never would have done what that person did. I never would have done what Cliff did. Yeah. But that's the essence of it. And when you get out there on that ledge, that's when you see stuff that other people don't see. And that's, you know, why, you know, sometimes you get to that point where other people are just too shy to go too near the edge. Sometimes when you go near the edge, you see ways to get up, you know, higher, you know, on the mountain than other people down on the ground can't see. Sometimes one of my closest friends in college was an avid mountain climber, and he told me this. He said, Cliff, sometimes the best way to get to the top of a mountain is just to run up to the damn thing with your pitons and your equipment and just start putting one hand over the other until you're too far up to turn back safely. The more time you spend looking at that mountain, the more time you spend looking at the damn thing, the more you think, I'm not going to climb that thing at all. I can't see how I'm going to get from point A to point B and stuff like that. Yeah. You know, generally speaking, he says, and I'll tell you something, Cliff. He says, trust me, when you get to the point where you really couldn't see, you know, how you were going to get there, one of two things always happens. Usually, 80% of the time, you'll see, once you're up there and you're hanging from the cliff face, you'll see handholds that you couldn't see from ground zero. You'll be able to get, you know, past that point that worried you. And the other 20% of the time, well, you still can't figure out how you're going to do it. But when you're hanging from a cliff face 500 feet up in the air, you are damn well motivated to find one. You know? So I always remember that, because that is a perfect metaphor for the entrepreneurial experience. It really is.
You know, this is so uncanny. The absolute true story. I swear to it on my life. Last night, my wife and I were at dinner. We went to this business function, and we were talking about some stuff for next year. And I proposed to my wife, is my business partner, Cliff, and I proposed that we do some very aggressive things in terms of investment in advertising and a few other things. And she was extremely nervous. And we were sitting there talking about it. And you know, I told her, I said, one of the things that you bring to the table is that you're very frugal. And I appreciate that. And I swear to you, I sat there and I told her, I said, I'm different. I'm ruthless. Mm-hmm. And I used that exact word. I told her, I said, I don't even know why I'm using that word, but I feel like it most accurately describes me. And I'm not saying that I'm that way in a bad way.
It's not a bad thing. It's right. Not a bad thing at all. When you realize what the word really means, it doesn't, it's not a bad thing at all. It's frankly, you know, I mean, you've heard people say, you know, what's the key to your success is, well, the answer is I was too stupid to know any better. And that's why I did what I did, you know, and there's a lot of that too. You never know unless you get out there, and the more time you spend thinking about things, you know, and this is where lawyers get a bad rap, and we're going to talk about
this. No, you guys get a bad rap from a lot of angles.
We do. I mean, I'll share with you, but a friend of mine is an in-house counsel for a bank, and they refer to his department, his legal department, as the sales prevention department. That's actually how they look at him, know, and his role in the company. You know, so we're the guys that have to kind of throw cold water. Have you thought about this? Have you thought about this?
But we used to call him the revenue suppression department.
Very similar. Bingo. Same idea. Exactly. So, you know, but if you're a true entrepreneur, you know, you have to listen to your attorneys. No one wants to end up wearing an orange jumpsuit. But, you know, short of that, you do have a lot more leeway. You know, I mean, lawyers are conditioned in a way not to take risks. I'm sort of one of the rare exceptions because I kind of straddle the line a little bit. I have actually, you know, been involved in some entrepreneurial ventures, you know, not as a lawyer, but as a participant. And we're going to talk about this as a founder, as a company founder.
Yep.
You know, so it's easy for me, but it's sometimes you got to just say, damn the torpedoes. I got to get where it's going to go. And I'll make my apologies. I'll clean up any messes I make later on if I have time.
Yeah. And I want to talk a little bit about your background, Cliff, but I don't want to miss one quick point before we move on. And that is, you know, in your discussion there in talking about being ruthless, I think one of the things that a lot of people get wrong is somebody that is ruthless, it's not that they have the answer. A lot of times they're willing to take that step or to jump, mm-hmm. and they don't know how it's going to work out. And also, I think a lot of people, when they see somebody that was successful and they did those crazy things, they think that the ruthless person wasn't scared. And both of those things are absolutely false.
Well,
ruthless people are terrified
there
sometimes when taking risks
well,
like
it's,
that.
As you said, it's there's a negative connotation with the word ruthless. And
right.
people think, my goal, you're like George Costanza at the kid's birthday party. There's a fire and he's pushing small children out of the way. And he was just, you know, ruthless. I'm getting the hell out of here. But that's truly
right.
not it.
And, that's not it.
And you've done this. And as we talk today, I know some of the
words. And hey, he got out of that building alive, didn't he?
He damn sure right. Skipping. That's right.
So there you go. You know,
also didn't declare
but if you're really interested in this, I actually have a whole hour long YouTube video on this. If you go on YouTube, you can either search for my name, Cliff Enico. It's E-N-N-I-C-O. You'll see all the things I have up there. But if you search for three personality traits every entrepreneur should develop, that's the title of it. Three personality traits every entrepreneur should develop. It's yeah. a whole hour long video on the three characteristics of successful entrepreneurs. I mean, they've done, you know, brainwave. I'll scare your audience now. They've done two. I actually follow psychological research sometimes, you know, like scientific studies. They've actually done brainwave studies. First, the good one. They have done brainwave studies that pretty much conclude that when you are exhilarated and really excited about something, your brain waves are exactly the same as they are when you're absolutely terrified of something.
Great.
The emotion, those two emotions are pretty much the same, at least at a quantitative, you know, brainwave level. I mean, I'm not enough of a scientist to know the science behind it, but these are, you know, certified, you know, control studies and stuff. The second one, which is more fun to talk about, is that in control studies, successful entrepreneurs and convicted serial killers, people on death row, react to the same stimuli in much the same way at a brainwave level. There's actually been published research on this, which to me is fascinating. And frankly, it describes a lot of the people I work with, frankly, as clients, you know, so that's really the scary part of it.
It makes me want to go back and look at more Steve Jobs' photos, because I think there's something there behind those glasses. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'll swear, the more I work in this community, the more I work with entrepreneurs, the more I realize the line that separates genius from madness is a very thin one. You know, it really is. Yeah. And it's amazing. I mean, that's why it's, you know, people like, you know, Mark Zuckerberg, you know, the founder of Facebook and all, these are true unicorns. These are very unique people, Steve Jobs. Yeah. You know, there just aren't many, many people who would have done the things that they did to survive. And that's why they are, you know, who they are, or they were who they are.
You know, when I hear controlled studies, all I can think about is a room full of scientists, baboons, and me and Mr. Winnie.
Thank you for leaving me out of that. I truly appreciate it.
You need a simpler human like me and Mr. Winnie
that's
in that
awesome.
Room, yes.
So, Cliff, I have a question for you.
Yes.
Were you an entrepreneur before you were a lawyer, or were you a lawyer before you were an entrepreneur?
Boy, that's a very good question. Probably I was an entrepreneur before I was a lawyer. I mean, I was destined to be an entrepreneur. I mean, I didn't have a lemonade stand because, frankly, I hate lemonade. But
it's not beer.
You couldn't write.
It's not beer. No.
He couldn't get the proper E&O insurance that he needed.
No, a lemon shandy. I mean, I'm down for that.
I was just going to say, maybe a hard lemonade or something like that. I haven't had any of those, but I just, you know, anything that makes me pucker, you know, it's just, you know, but you know, that is not my wife. But seriously, I never had that. But it goes downhill from here, guys. But seriously, I mean, I had a paper route. My mom was the local Avon lady. So my very first, you know, job was she would send me around with two shopping bags full of stuff, and I would handle all her deliveries for her, which, you know, her cosmetics. And so, you know, collecting from customers, learning how to be nice to people, dealing with customers who don't pay on time, you know, and that kind of stuff. I learned it from a very early age. And that gig worked out well, by the way, until my voice changed. You know, remember their whole thing used to be, you know, ding dong. Avon calling. You know, well, it's one thing, you know, to ring somebody's doorbell and they say, who is it? And Avon calling with a deep bass voice. I mean, it just, you know, once my voice changed, I mean, the gig kind of changed there. It wasn't working for mom as well as it was.
Sales went down, huh?
So you were the enforcer, the collector for Avon. Really?
Yeah, women's cosmetics at the age of 9 years old. I mean, seriously.
You showing up with a little billy club going, hey, you're late, okay? You got your Avon last week. Now you got to pay up.
Okay, yeah, that's it. You know. Okay, Mrs. Shaughnessy. Okay, Mrs. Shaughnessy, pay up or give me back your damn eyeliner. You know, it was that kind of, you know, thing. But this is my introduction to the world of entrepreneurship. And then, you know, I did a paper route. I always had jobs. I always did. When I was in college, I worked my way through. The law was not really my first love, believe it or not. High school, I kind of knew it was either going to be law or journalism or some combination of the two. I knew very early on I wasn't going to be a doctor. I didn't, you know, or anything like that. I mean, biology and chemistry were my two worst grades in school. I mean, there was no way I was going to stick my hand into somebody's guts.
Thank God you chose law because it's still relevant.
Well, you know, it's the way it worked. Well, it's so I still haven't completely resolved that, to be honest with you. I'm still half a lawyer and having me look at all the writing I've done, all the speaking I do. But when I was in college, I actually was a disc jockey, believe it or not. You know, and at one time I was actually working for two competing radio stations using different air names. So people would know, you know, that I was working for two, I had to work my way through college. I did all kinds of, you know, horrible odd jobs. I worked my way through law school. I worked in the law school, the law library, and I also did, I was a very fast typist. So I used to do student papers, term papers for the undergraduates. I would do their typing. I'd stay up all night and bang out like five term papers in a night. And this is how I worked my way through law school.
That's really
good. I graduated law school with,
you know, because I remember paying people to write my paper. After I'd write them, I'd hand them over to somebody else because they had to be turned and printed.
Yeah.
Let's be very clear. I wasn't writing their papers for them. I was typing them. Let's be very, very, very clear.
I would have given you a lot of
grammar for an extra fee. I would clean up their grammar and stuff. Yeah.
We're talking to an IP attorney here, so.
You got it, kids.
There you go.
So copyright.
Out of law school, then what happened? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut off like that.
Well, here's the thing, though. I mean, I didn't go right to law school, though, and this is an important thing. I mean, my first love was really journalism. When I first came out of college, I had some loans to pay off, so I actually became a police reporter for a daily newspaper in Yonkers, New York, for 2 years. And my claim to fame there was I was the police reporter of the Yonkers Daily newspaper on the day that David Berkowitz, the son of Sam, was arrested in Yonkers, New York.
Wow.
One of the most famous serial killers of the 20th century. Yeah. He was the one that was, you know, scouting out discos and randomly killing young women. I mean, this was a real sick dude. And when he was arrested, my claim to fame was, I mean, I was actually able to get inside his apartment for about 2 minutes before the detectives realized who I was, and they, you know, bodily threw me out of the building. You know, seriously, these two beefy guys picked me up, and they were screaming at me. He goes, you jackass, do you realize if they see your fingerprints in here, do you realize how much trouble you're going to be in? You know, that kind of thing. But I got inside there, and that story went viral. I was actually nominated for a Pulitzer for that work back then. But as you point out, you talk about journalism no longer being relevant. It's also no way to make money ever. I mean, journalists starve. That has not changed. You live in your car and you're working 90 hours a week for $20,000-$30,000 a year. Who's going to do that? So I said to myself, I mean, after about a year of taking this punishment, I said, you know, I love it. I mean, I love seeing myself in print. I love writing. But to be honest with you, if I'm going to work this hard, I really want to make a decent living. You know, even a schlubby lawyer, you know, some small town lawyer, you know, in nowhere, Idaho or something like that, makes a six-figure living. You know, lawyers don't starve,
right?
You know, so you know that we that know. Was that, that yeah. So that's kind of how the sense got beaten into me, and then I went to law school. So it's an interesting, you know, thing.
Quick question, because you said this was son of Sam, David Berkowitz, and you earlier you said there's a fine line between being an entrepreneur and a serial killer. So do you think he would have made a good entrepreneur?
You know,
if he had if he had a little direction in his life,
use his powers for good.
You don't have to answer that. We'll just keep going.
I got a podcast with this knucklehead, okay?
I mean, any sort of animal or dog related business probably would have been very perfect for him. Actually, you think about that. You know?
I shouldn't be laughing. I know, but it's hilarious.
That's great.
Well, no, it's actually sort of a funny thing.
Guys, not us. It was the lawyer who said it. If you have a problem.
His disclaimer is better than ours, Darren. Trust me,
a lot better.
Yeah,
you know,
holy smokes!
It's sort of funny. I mean, we have a block party in my neighborhood, and they sometimes do these trivia questions, you know, to get people to know each other a little bit better. So they asked, one of the questions they asked was, what's the one thing about yourself you would be nervous about other people knowing? And so I had to have some fun with this. So my answer was my personal relationship with three serial killers. One was David Berkowitz, you know, from, you know, professionally, but I won't get into the other two. Let's just say that none of them are relatives, to my knowledge. you know, but I do notice that people do not walk their, they don't walk their dogs on my property very often.
I see what we're doing here. Very, you know, very well done.
it didn't come up at the block party, but I think there's a reason why some of my neighbors will take a wide berth around my property. But
you always have a parking spot, don't you?
Mm-hmm. And no one ever sits next to me on the subway, let me tell you.
There you go.
So you get done with law school, and then what?
Then I became a lawyer, and I did work on Wall Street for a few years. And, you know, because of the way Wall Street worked at that time, you know, I actually ended up working for some VC firms back when there was still venture capital being done out of New York. Now it's almost all done out of California, at least the really high level stuff. But there was VC back in the early 80s when I first started practicing law. And I found that I enjoyed it. I loved working with entrepreneurs. I loved being part of something that I was building. You know, too many lawyers, and we'll talk about this maybe a little bit later on, but they're, you know, a former dean of Harvard Law School once referred to lawyers as the janitors of society. You know, we're the ones that clean up everybody's mess. And let me tell you, that can really get you down, too, as lawyers. You know, I mean, a very good college friend of mine is a top bankruptcy lawyer in New York. He does a lot of like big business bankruptcies and stuff like that. And you know, when we get together, this is just one very unhappy dude. You know, he says, Cliff, you know, by the time my firm gets involved in something, something has died. A business has died. A relationship has died. And my job is to make sure that my client walks away with the biggest piece of the corpse.
Ooh,
I mean, can you imagine?
Morbid.
It is, but can you imagine thinking about what you do for a living that way?
I know.
That's how you add value to society. See, I can't do that. I learned in law school that I just do not have the, how can I say, I have to see positive things going on here. I mean, I'm very excited about the work that I do. I feel the analogy that I use, I feel like the maternity ward nurse in a hospital. You know, everybody else is seeing people, you know, with disease, people dying, people with artificial limbs. I'm seeing people going home with babies. That's what I love about what I do. I feel that I'm part of making something happen that was before, a more of a creative process. And that's why I got involved in this. I said to myself, you know, I mean, I loved working. I mean, Wall Street was fun. I learned an awful lot, you know, about corporate finance and stuff. But I said to myself, I really want to be on the other side of the table. I really want to be working with entrepreneurs. So in the late 80s, I kind of took a leave of Wall Street. I basically went off on my own. I worked part-time for a law firm in, you know, Southport, Connecticut, just to build a practice. And through a series of lucky breaks, I got very heavily involved in the entrepreneur community in Southern New England, and that's really what launched my career.
So, Cliff, I want to brag about you a little bit. And here's what I really appreciate about you. So, I have run across so many lawyers in my career, you know, for big business and small business, that have absolutely earned every stereotype, every joke about lawyers you've ever heard. right? So you think about it from being on the inside, and you know, we think about it from needing lawyers when we need them.
You mean liars?
Some of them, yeah. And even lawyers that support entrepreneurs, Cliff. I mean, I've run across, you know, lawyers that help start up businesses and absolutely rip them off. And I'm going to say a couple things about you that I really appreciate and why I want our listeners to look you up and read your books. Number one, you're a very honest man. As I said in the beginning, I'm a client of yours. Your rates are extremely reasonable. I got more than what I expected from an attorney. First time ever in my frickin' life. Okay. Number two, you are very aware of how people view lawyers, and your humor and your self-deprecation, not only about yourself, but about your industry, help break down some of the angst that people have about using lawyers. Because I'm going to tell you, if you're an entrepreneur for the first time, needing a lawyer for this stuff, it is very, very, I mean, it makes you nervous.
Well,
if
anybody has watched the show, well, we do have a YouTube
A YouTube channel. It's freaking banned. No, maybe you can help us with that, Cliff.
We're back up again. Don't screw it up.
People,
we always tell people that are doing this, get a lawyer. Get a lawyer.
Yeah, we do all the time.
Review contracts, whatever.
But man, it is really scary because there are so many of them out there that will freaking rip you off.
Yeah, they will.
And even
the good ones, let me interrupt to say, a lot of people are afraid of lawyers, even good ones, even ones that don't jack up their fees and do stuff like that and play games. I mean, even people are afraid of talking to lawyers because they're afraid they're going to be judged, that we're going to be looking down their nose at them. Well, wait a minute, you did this. That was stupid. Why did you do that? You know, that kind of thing. You know, that like we're looking over our glasses at them, you know, judging them. They're afraid of that. You know, the smartest dumb thing I ever did in my practice, when I set up my website in the early 90s, is, you know, cliffenico.com, which is my lawyer website. I have several websites, but that's the one I use for my law practice, is cliffenico.com. I wrote the text of the thing myself because I wanted to make it clear that this is a different kind of experience. I didn't really even use the L word until about midway down the page. I didn't even say that. I say I help grow small businesses. That's, you know, really, that's how I pitch myself. The L stuff comes later. But here's the thing. At the very end, I couldn't figure out how to end the thing. You know, I wanted a call to action, like, you know, still have questions, send me an email at whatever address. So I just thought this just popped into my head. Still have questions, call me ... I don't bite.
You know, and website,
and here's my email
address. Still says that.
Yeah. It still says that. Yep.
It still says that. I cannot tell you how many times people have called me and said, when I read all the way to the bottom and I saw that, I knew I wanted to hire you as my attorney because you don't bite. I'm not worried. I'm not afraid. I say, like, people call me and they say, you know, I'm really sorry, but I've got this problem. I said, what are you sorry about? This is what I do. I help people solve, you know, your kind of problem. And don't worry, I think I can solve your problem. You know, I mean, you're not gonna go bankrupt here. You know, this is. You know what I do. I say, you've got a problem. Great. You're in the right place. This is what I do. Let's talk about that. You know, I'm not going to judge you. Hell, you know, I mean, the stuff happens, you know, like that guy, you know, that I nominated for Entrepreneur of the Year. You know, if I can help make that load a little bit easier, that's what I want to do.
Did you propose to your wife the same way, like halfway down through your proposal? Finally, you got to the L word you went ... You realize I don't bite?
Well, funny you mention that because she's sitting, she's standing right here. The hardest part of proposing to my wife was getting through all the disclaimers first.
Yours or
you
hers?
Know, that is a very lawyer habit. You know, we have to tell you what we're not going to do, you know, before we tell you what we're actually going to do for you, you know, that kind of stuff. I'm afraid that's one lawyer habit I do have, unfortunately, but she tolerated it anyway. You know?
And there is no doubt in my mind that that's a very lopsided contract, my friend.
How true is that? I think she would probably agree with me. She stuck with me for 34 years, though, so I guess it's okay.
Yeah, you're doing something right. So yeah, here's something fascinating, Cliff, that I want to tell our listeners about. So I think probably everybody listening right now has heard of the show Shark Tank.
Right.
Big show. But here's what people probably don't know. That was not an original show idea or format.
Really?
Yeah, it was actually a show on PBS called Money Hunt that you started with Miles Spencer.
Right.
Tell us about that show.
Okay, well, this is one of the entrepreneurial things that I was involved in. One of the reasons I went off on my own, frankly, and left Wall Street was I wanted to have more time to pursue some entrepreneurial dreams that I had, and a couple of them ended up bearing fruit. This was not one of them. I have always been a very good public speaker. This is the way that I've always built my business and promoted myself. I learned early on, I have no fear of public speaking. If you were to call me and say, "Hey, Cliff, we've had a cancellation. We need you to talk to 500 people tomorrow on a topic you know nothing about." That to me is like an adrenaline rush. You know, I mean, most people would be utterly terrified by something like that, but I do not have the gene that fears public speaking. I will get up in front of an audience and I have no fear of it whatsoever. So in the course of, you know, promoting my practice, I came across Miles and we became very friendly. We were working kind of in the same space. He was a seed capital investor, like an angel investor in Southern Connecticut. And when he needed a speaker, a lawyer to speak on one of his things, he'd invite me along. If I needed a finance person on one of mine, I'd invite him along. And the two of us became friendly. And one night we were coming back from Boston. He and I had done a thing for Inc. magazine. And we were driving back and we got caught up in this colossal snowstorm. We had to pull off the highway or something and wait a couple of hours and, you know, while we were cleaning up the roads. And you know, you run out of things to talk about after a while. So we started talking about, you know, what about a TV show for entrepreneurs? What would a TV show for entrepreneurs look like? How could we make that interesting? How could we make that compelling? Because, you know, these businesses, when they're pitching entrepreneurs, this is a big deal. There's a lot of drama in that. Right. You know, we probably could make something out of that. So a couple of weeks later, he called me and he goes, "Hey, Cliff, you got some time tomorrow night?" And I said, "Why?" He goes, "Well, I just rented a studio in Norwalk." You know, back then they had something called public access broadcasting. They still do. It's usually like, you know, channel 900 on your cable, you know, listing. This is where,
so,
you know, like all the
just
crazy.
Put it on YouTube now. Cliff,
well, now YouTube has done away with this. This is basically what YouTube is. It's public access broadcasting. This is where all the crazy preachers used to be and stuff like that. So he just decided, you know, let's just have some fun with this. So I have to say, I really wish I could take credit for this. I can't. I got to give him credit. He was the originator of this concept. He came up with the name, and basically it was just there were three of us. He and I, and we would invite people we knew. I would invite a couple of my clients and stuff. We sat around a card table with a black backdrop with a one cameraman who was just drunk all the time. You know, he could barely get it straight. You know, I still have some of the videos from those days, and the cameraman is kind of like focused on my right ear for 10 minutes, you know, that kind of thing, before he realized that he was off, you know, that kind of thing.
Could you afford the tripod for the camera? Or was it like a handheld thing? You know,
it was a tripod thing, you know, back then. And,
that's high tech.
And we had a producer who was 82 years old at the time, you know, and she was like half asleep all the time. It was public access television. They had to give you, as long as you paid, you know, them a few bucks, they had to give you access back then. So we did this, and we took the guests out to dinner and stuff, you know, but there was no money involved in any of this. You know, basically we treated him to dinner in exchange for us ripping him apart and telling him what he's doing wrong and all that kind of stuff. Well, then about 3 or 4 months after we started doing this, just for giggles, really, Miles called me up and he said, "Hey, Cliff, are you sitting down?" And I said, "Yeah." He goes, "We've been picked up by PBS, public television." I said, "You're kidding." Apparently what happened, and this is what happens. You never can tell where things are gonna end up. A senior PBS executive was dropping his son off at Yale in New Haven, Connecticut. And he also got kind of snowed in his hotel room. He was flipping channels and he came across our show on public access. And when he saw it, he realized there was nothing like this on television at all. So he called Miles. You know, we always had a phone number at the bottom of the thing, and, you know, call us if you have any, want to be on the show, yada, yada. He called up, and the next thing you know, we went to PBS, and the show was a minor hit. It actually ran on public television from 1994 to 2003. And it basically was Shark Tank, but how can I say it, with a little bit more of an educational component. Because it was PBS. Yeah, because it was public television, we couldn't give out money on the show and do stuff like that. Also, there were some SEC rules that we couldn't violate that prohibited us from doing that. It was more of an educational show. What we did was we would get a guest on with an interesting business. The first half of the show, Miles and I would just basically rip the liver out of this guy. And then what we would do is, with a fine Chianti and fava beans.
That's a serial killer reference right there. So uh-huh. I'm beginning to wonder.
Right. But okay. But here's the gimmick. Our gimmick was that, in a back room watching the show, we would have a guest called the Money Hunt Mentor. And this was a major figure in this entrepreneur's industry. So the first half of the show was Miles and me telling this guy everything he does wrong, or this person, everything they were doing wrong. And then after the break, we would bring out from behind a curtain the Money Hunt Mentor, who was a big name. So, for example, you had this little software startup in Illinois, all of a sudden, out from behind the curtain comes Jerry Yang, the founder of Yahoo. Remember, this is the 90s now.
Yeah.
And Jerry would sit down with this guy and basically tell him, what he could be doing better, how he could improve things. He basically kind of evened the playing field. We were the bad cops. He was the good cop, or he or she. And we had some wonderful people on the show. We had Jerry Yang, the founder of Yahoo. We had Debbie Fields, the founder of Mrs. Fields Cookies, came on our show. We had, it was the 90s. We had some amazing guests on the show, some of the top venture capitalists of the time. And of course, being the lawyer, I was kind of like the comic, the humor interest of the show. I was the one.
That's what everybody thinks of when they think lawyers, the funny one.
Exactly. That's true.
Only if you send my cousin Vinny. Now that's a funny lawyer.
Yeah.
Two utes.
Yeah. It says a lot about this show. One of my proudest moments, I still have this on my wall. The New York Times actually reviewed us. And one of the things they said is, it says a lot about the tenor of this show that the lawyer on the panel is the nice guy. that was the that was the comment.
Definitely,
and it was actually a fun thing. In fact, if you go on YouTube, if you type in Money Hunt TV show, some of the old episodes are still up there. I still keep in touch with Miles every once in a while. And some of the old episodes are still up there. You can see what this was all about. But I mean, don't get me wrong. We had nothing to do with Shark Tank. I mean, Shark Tank
but you laid a foundation for that. Now come on.
We laid
you
a guys foundation
pretty much
for
laid a foundation for a lot of the shows that are out there now where it's,
we're
going to tell you what you're doing wrong with your business. There's the one with the restaurant people.
Bar Rescue.
All these shows.
Right.
Yeah, there's a lot of them. You guys are the founders. You really were.
Yeah.
We were the pioneers. We were the first ones, to our knowledge, we were the first ones that actually went out there and did anything like this, showing that business could actually be entertaining.
More credit than you're trying to right now, Cliff. That's incredible.
We're trying to ride your coattails and make business entertaining.
We are.
How are we doing? We doing okay?
And you're doing it while drinking beer all the time. You guys are geniuses. You are actually having fun doing this.
We try. I have a question for you. There was an episode that I watched, and I think it was Money Hunt, and you went and interviewed a woman about her bookstore in New York City, and she had like the big competition across the street. Is that the Money Hunt show?
Yeah, that was one of them. Yeah, that's the one. What we did right toward the end, we kind of got caught up in the whole dot-com bubble bursting in the early 2000s. It's kind of hard to talk about this today, but back in the early 2000s, you couldn't give away a show about the internet, believe it or not, because of the dot-com bubble bursting. And we got caught up in that. We had trouble getting a lot of guests. We kind of became known as an internet show, and that didn't help us in 2002 after 9/11 and after the dot-com bubble burst. It was a hard thing. So we did a spinoff show called Money Hunt Small Business Challenge, which was really my show. I was the host of the show. Okay. And we had this lady on who had a bookstore. It was exactly like the movie You've Got Mail with Tom Hanks. And
I was trying to figure out which one came first, that movie or this episode that you had.
The movie came out first.
Okay.
What we did was we found someone who had exactly that situation. She had a bookstore on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, and she had Barnes and Borders, I think, was moving in like right down the street from her. And we got a panel of experts together. There was me. We had somebody who a marketing expert, and then we had somebody who had actually fought against a big box retailer. The idea was that it was a three-person panel. There was me, a book expert, and a life expert.
Yeah.
The book expert expert is someone who really knew, you know, the technical stuff. The life expert was someone who'd actually done what the entrepreneur wanted to do. That was the concept. And then the three of us kind of, you know, gave them some advice. So yeah, that those episodes are up on YouTube. And I'll tell you, one of my greatest dreams would be to recreate that show today and to do something like that.
Hopefully not the wearing the same crowd. Clothes that were worn back then.
Right.
Because
yeah. And maybe there's an opportunity to collaborate with the Beer and Business podcast. We might need
there
to talk.
Go. There we go.
So
there we go. So anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. So first of all, it's got to feel amazing to be a part of a show that, you know, you can say what you want about it. You guys were the pioneers of a lot of formats, and that's really huge. And mm-hmm. I want to challenge all of our listeners to go out and look some of that stuff up. Really, really cool. But one of the things that we haven't really talked about yet, Cliff, is you have written, 16 books?
16, yes.
Why
going on
in 17. The hell have you written so many freaking books?
All right. Here's a short, I'll give you a short answer and then a longer one. I can't take credit for this, but somebody, when I was in high school, I saw somebody on TV, some kind of a self-help show. And the person, somebody said something and it really stuck in my head. They said, if you really want to learn something, write a book about it. And there's a lot
very
of
true.
That, doing the kind of work I do, I cannot afford to be a specialist. People sometimes ask me, hey, Cliff, what kind of law do you specialize in? And I really can't answer that question. I'm not a specialist at all. I'm a generalist.
What are you
I really
you
am.
Paying I mean, for? Right?
You know, it's
whatever I can
depends on what the
really,
check's for.
I can't. Well, here's how I respond. I usually say, well, I don't really specialize in any type of law. I mean, I try to be like an internist for my clients. You know, I mean, I try to answer basic questions, and if they really do need a specialist, I refer them to somebody. I said, but there is a certain sweet spot when it comes to Cliff Enico clients. All my clients have two things in common: they don't know what they're doing, and they have no money. Those are the typical Cliff Enico. Those are the clients that tend to gravitate toward Cliff Enico.
So
and
do you barter?
And I love
wow, it was a perfect fit.
Is that like a barter
fit.
System?
I mean, this is it. They don't know what they're doing, and they have no money. This is And let me tell you, there's a lot of people like that. It is a huge underserved demographic out there. Mm-hmm. Those people, but I found a way to make it work, which I think a lot of attorneys, you know, are a little jealous of, is that I've actually found a way to make a living by working with people who are on limited budgets. They simply can't afford always to do the right thing. So what's the next best thing that has to be done? This is where I find my challenge. So I'm constantly learning. I'm constantly, doing new things. And whenever something new comes out and nobody really knows how to deal with it, I want to be the one who's out there first with the solution, with the answer. This pattern has come up a lot in my life. When I started practicing on my own, this was back when software was a big thing. Everybody was doing niche software products back in the early 90s, during the very early days of the internet. I was getting questions all the time. Hey, Cliff, do you know how to do a software license? So what I did was I just researched the hell out of software licenses. I wrote a few articles on software licenses and then volunteered to speak at an organization of software entrepreneurs where I picked up like 30 clients in one day. I made myself the expert, in other words. I went out there and said, okay, nobody else is talking about this. In the land of the blind, the one-eyed person is king. So I'm going to be that one-eyed person. I'm going to go out there and say, hey, there's a software lawyer out there. And by virtue of doing contracts for about a dozen clients, I learned how to do software licenses. This is how you grow as a professional. I mean,
sure.
The best example is the crowdfunding book, which is my newest book, came out a couple of years ago. When the SEC first adopted the crowdfunding rules, I knew back around 2012 when Congress passed the JOB Act that the crowdfunding thing was going to be the thing that was going to take off. And I said to myself, when the SEC passes regulations, this is going to be really big and everybody's going to want a book on crowdfunding. So rather than wait for the SEC, I called my publisher and I said, look, here's the situation. You got this thing called crowdfunding. It's going to happen sometime in 2014, 2015. When the SEC, I want to have the first book out on this? You know, are you interested? Are you willing to work with me? And they said yes. So as soon as the SEC came out with their proposed regulations on crowdfunding, the way the SEC works is first they hand out proposed regulations, then they take all kinds of comments from the public, and then they issue final regulations, which is when things really happen. As soon as we got the proposed regulations in 2013, I sat down and I wrote the book, a how-to book on how to do a crowdfunded offering based on those regulations. And I submitted it to the publisher. We started working with it. We weren't going to publish until the final regulations came out. Okay. But we wanted to have the book in print, you know, the day that the final regulations became effective. And it became kind of a running joke because the SEC took longer than usual to come out. Usually when the SEC proposes regulations, they issue the final regulations within 6 months to a year. With crowdfunding, they waited almost 3 years because crowdfunding was a very controversial thing. The SEC didn't like it. They felt that Congress tied their hands in some way. There was a lot of politics involved in that.
Shocking.
So the final regulations did not come out until December. I remember it was the week before Christmas, December 2015, and the regulations were going to be effective 6 months later on May 16th, 2016. So I called my publisher. I rewrote the manuscript based on what the final regulations were. We went into production, and that book came out on May 15th, 2016, the day before the SEC regulations became public, went effective, and the book sold, the first printing sold out within 2 weeks.
Wow. I got to tell you, that's gangsta.
So
that's bitch.
It is. Well,
I have a serious question for you about that book, Cliff. Which version of the four of shrink wrap did you use on that book?
There's an inside joke on that, by
the
way.
There is. People are going to have to figure that out. So let's not tell them the answer. They're going to search for that. But no, I have a serious question, though. If you have somebody, if you have a client who comes to you, and I mean, or without reading the book, just one quick teaser, I mean, you've got to still protect yourself. If you put up your business or your idea for crowdfunding, there's a lot of legal ramifications that are involved.
Yeah, well, it's right now crowdfunding is beginning to happen. It's going to take a while. It's not going to be, you know, a revolution in the way small businesses and entrepreneurs are financed. It's not going to be. It's going to be an evolution more than a revolution, but that's okay. Right. By getting the first book out there on how to do a crowdfunded offering, I am part of that revolution, and so I'm very proud of that.
If you can give the listeners just like one little tidbit and said, you know, buyer beware, or if you decide to go out and raise capital through crowdfunding, just give them one tidbit and then I can read the rest of your book. What would you tell them right now?
Okay. The thing would be, make sure before you even think about crowdfunding, make sure you have a strong following on social media. Crowdfunding is not for everyone. The crowdfunded market hasn't really yet developed to the point where if you post your offering up on a crowdfunding portal, investors just flock to you. Investors right now are not looking for crowdfunded offerings yet. That will happen with time as the market evolves, and especially as younger people, especially as the millennial generation and Gen X become, you know, more of a potent force in the economy. I think that crowdfunding will become a more viable way to raise money for a small business. Right now, the ideal company to raise money for a small business through crowdfunding is a company that has, it's a retail or a service business, maybe a light manufacturing business, that isn't really ready for crowdfunding or isn't ready for venture capital, who's not a company that's not really on the VC's radar screens. They're not a technology company. They're not heavy manufacturing. They're not media, but they have a huge social media following, and they want to tap into that social media following, to raise capital. They want to go beyond the traditional friends and family round of offering to reach out to their believers, to their fans, to the people who have already bought the company and bought the product. It's no secret, by the way. I mean, this is a beer and business show, but craft breweries and other companies, small companies in the liquor business, like single batch distillers of bourbon and stuff like that, have been big users of crowdfunding. Because number one, they're the type of business that VCs don't really look at. VCs don't usually invest in breweries, but a lot of craft breweries have very strong followings on social media, you know, locally or regionally. Yeah. They have a lot of fans and stuff like that. I mean, you know, if you're a craft brewery with, you know, 20,000 likes on Facebook and 5,000 Twitter followers, crowdfunding allows you to tap those people to raise money for your company. Hey, you bought the beer, now bought by the company. It's a very popular way for companies in the liquor business to raise money. So
yeah, it's a fascinating topic, you know, because I think one of the challenges that a lot of business people need to be aware of is we see the very public examples of people that started a crowdfunding exercise mm-hmm. for a sick cancer patient or, you know, whatever it is, you know, insert whatever the cause is. And mm-hmm. it's like, oh, my God, they raised $2 million. I need to do that for my business. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's that easy, nor is it straightforward when it comes like to the legal side of this.
A Kickstarter or anything like that. Let me I'm going to play like.
No.
Let me pretend to be the idiot. No, wait. I am the idiot.
There's no pretending, Darren. Okay. But please continue.
ID10T. Here I come. So if you see a Kickstarter campaign for a new product or idea, when you contribute to that, do you get profit from that if it actually launches? Do you get shares? Do you get how does that work for the general public that are listening?
Okay, well, you have to distinguish between two things. Kickstarter, first of all, is not doing what we call equity crowdfunding at all. It's what we call project crowdfunding. Okay. So, for example, people who are investing in Kickstarter are not investing in a company. They're not getting stock or bonds or anything like that. They're getting a piece of a project. So, for example, I'm an inventor. I've come up with a new spork, you know, the spoon and fork thing you use for your salads and stuff. It's a new design. Yeah. I'm looking for $50,000 so I can get it patented. And if I do get the patent and we get into manufacturing, I'll send you for each $100, you'll get a spork. You know, that kind of thing. Sure. That's what a project crowdfunding. Equity crowdfunding is different. That's where you're actually selling stock in your company, just like you would in a regular, like an IPO. You're saying, you know, for a $100 investment, you get, you know, one share. For $500, you get, you know, five shares. You know, that kind of thing. You know, equity crowdfunding has to be done a very special way under the SEC rules. There are special crowdfunding portals that you have to go through. There is about two dozen crowdfunding portals now. WeFunder.com, SeedInvest.com are two of the ones that come to the top of my mind here that actually do this, where you basically do an offering document, you post it on a crowdfunding portal, and then you tell your social media followers to look at the crowdfunding portal and consider investing in you. You have to do it a certain way. You can't just go on your website and saying, now selling 10% of our company. That there's a whole lot of rules you have to be aware of with this. But for the right kind of business, especially one that has a large following that they can tap into, it's a great way to go. Especially if you're the kind of business that can't tap the venture capital markets. So another example that I use, let's say you have a restaurant. There's a famous restaurant in New York called Francis Tavern. It's over 200 years old. It's a historic place. It's where George Washington said, you know, farewell to his generals at the end of the American Revolution. It's on the National Register of Historic Places. It's the kind of place you go to propose to your boyfriend or girlfriend or to celebrate a 50th anniversary. It's, you know, it's that kind of thing. But at the end of the day, this is a famous restaurant. Everybody's heard of it. It features in the Broadway show Hamilton, for example. But at the end of the day, it's a restaurant. And restaurants, it's a service business. It doesn't qualify for VC. Venture capitalists do not invest in restaurants. Yet, Francis Tavern has over 100,000 likes on Facebook. It has 50,000 Twitter followers. It's constantly in the news. Everybody knows who Francis Tavern is.
Boom, there you go.
You know, if boom, if they do a crowdfunding, say, you know, we're looking to raise $1 million and we're willing to give up 10% of our company for that, they will get investors because people want the cool factor of saying to their friends that they have a piece of Francis Tavern, you know, that kind of thing.
This is really important, Cliff, because I think where a lot of people might get confused is that the project crowdfunding has been around, and in, as I understand it, is not governed by the SEC. The part that the SEC is governing is the actual investment side of crowdfunding. Do I have that right?
That's correct.
And I think I'm sorry, but I was going to say, I think a lot of people don't realize that. And I have seen, like, you know, Kickstarter campaigns and, you know, other platforms where you can tell that there was somebody that did some sort of, you know, campaign, just like you would a project crowdfund, but for equity, and probably had no idea that what they are doing is regulated by the SEC. And that could be a big old no-no. And that'd be one of those people that calls you later and says, "Hey, Cliff, I'm in trouble."
Yep, you better believe it. Well, you know, there's nothing wrong with doing, you know, a crowdfunding on Kickstarter, but you got to be very specific about what the investors are going to get. There are some cases, they're not securities cases, they're more like consumer fraud cases where, you know, where somebody, you know, launched a Kickstarter thing for like an invention. They took some people's money and then they just went to Vegas, you know, and blew it all. They had no intention of ever doing the thing that they said they were going to do. And there are some consumer fraud cases where those people have been sued.
Interesting question regarding that, Cliff, because I think probably if you look in the fine print, right, it's buyer beware. Yeah. And there really is no guarantee that you're going to get anything back for that Kickstarter contribution, right?
What's the Latin version of that phrase? Cliff, you're a
lawyer. What's that?
Buyer beware.
That's right. Caveat
impentor.
Caveat emptor. That's right. Yeah, that's it. Most of the law, by the way, is just common sense with Latin names, by the way. I hate to blow my image here as a lawyer, but that's oh yeah, res ipsa loquitur. Yeah, we get it. The res ipsa loquitur. So just don't do that, dummy. Anyway, but seriously, so crowdfunding is really an interesting thing. I think it's a thing that's going to be big. Right now, I mean, just as an example, I'm reading everything I possibly can on blockchain right now. Not that I'm planning to do a blockchain.
God bless your soul,
ever.
Dude. Wow. Jesus, criminy.
You have a hard time sleeping, Cliff? Is that your problem? It's like, well, I could read about blockchain or I could read the history of this.
I could gouge my eyes out or I could read about blockchain. Which one do I want?
Honey, can we talk about crocheting tonight? I really want to know the difference between a latch hook and a hook knit pearl.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, this is the thing. This is the difference between me and most lawyers. See, I ask myself the question.
You're crazy?
Well, I probably am. I mean, I'm not a serial killer, but I probably am, you know, a little bit out there. But seriously, though, I mean, this is how my brain works. What's the next area where people are going to have lots of legal questions? And how can I get ahead of that curve? How can I get ahead of that? This is where the entrepreneur in me comes out.
Exactly.
You know, people are going to be asking a million things about how can people get in legal trouble with blockchain? And I want to be the first one to come out with the answer to that question. And here's what you can do about it. You know, that's the thing. Here's how blockchains can screw up. And here are some ways you can prevent this from happening to you. Once I do that, then I'm going to get all the blockchain legal business. You know, that's kind of how I've done things in my career. I look for the new things. I don't want to do real estate closings and wills and all the stuff that lawyers have been doing for thousands of years. I don't really care about that. There's a million good lawyers out there who can do that kind of stuff. I want to do the stuff where there aren't a lot of lawyers out there that are doing it, where there isn't a whole lot of competition, you know, where people have a sincere need for, you know, for counseling and getting things done right, you know, but there aren't a whole lot of other people that they can go to. I want to be the people to think about, well, if you're talking crowdfunding, you got to talk to Cliff Enico because he's the guy that wrote the book on it. You know, there's entrepreneurial lessons in that, especially for people in service businesses. You know, this is how you grow your practice. You take on the stuff that nobody else is doing.
Yeah. And speaking of that, one of the things that I really wanted to hit on today while we had you on the show for our listeners, one of the projects that you took on that was probably one of the biggest tools that I used when starting my business was your book, The Small Business Survival Guide.
Oh, yes.
And I'm going to tell you, so for you, our listeners, guys, buy this freaking book. I don't care if you're starting a business or you already own one. you need this book. What I loved about this book, this is one of those books, Cliff, that when I read it, I was taking notes. I was, you know, putting post-it notes on pages so I could go back to them. This was a really, really good book. This is a, Darren, this is one of those practical books that gives you the things that you would never think about. Like, one of the most obscure things I remember reading that was like one of those aha moments was how to endorse a check as a corporation. Like the most stupid, like fucking, like out of the ordinary things. And I'm like, oh, damn, I never thought about that. But it's got the most practical stuff, but it's also strategic and it's in your head. Freaking awesome book. Honestly, for starting a business, Cliff, one of the best books I've read.
And I just, he's got it here in the studio.
He just stole my freaking copy.
And he has the copy. So I just, he tells me how great it is. So I'm going to borrow it so I don't have to buy the damn thing.
Borrow, quote unquote.
It's a good, entrepreneurs, you know, have to find ways to shortcut and save a little money. So way to do it.
This book has become kind of a classic. It has. I wrote it, just so you know, I wrote it in 2006. But it's one of my best sellers. It still, you know, it still sells out, you know, for the publishers. It has a long tail, as we say in the publishing world.
Oh, it's awesome.
I took a different approach to this topic. What I did was I said, I don't want to write a law book, because the minute you say it's a law book, people, you know, aren't interested. What I did was I divided the book into 12 chapters, and in each chapter I talk about the 12 enemies that every small business has to overcome if they're going to be, you know, successful. And each chapter is devoted to a particular type of enemy. So, for example, the first chapter is, you know, dealing with competitors. I mean, duh, these are the most obvious enemies that you're small. Every business has competition. Don't ever lure yourself into thinking that there isn't. They're out there. They may not be easy to find. They sometimes don't look like you do, you know, but they're out there. And here are some strategies for how you deal with that. Chapter two then deals with creditors.
I have a couple,
you know, another big,
though,
you know, sure.
Because I'm looking here and chapter six is the government, your biggest partner. Is that a misprint?
No, well, the government is chapter six. That's the sixth. You know, I refer to them as enemies, but, you know, sometimes
you said the biggest, you know, your partner, business, though, which is good.
They can. Well, they can.
But then chapter seven, I see where it says spouse and ex-spouse.
I don't know. I probably share more money with the government than I do my partner.
Well, until you get to chapter seven.
That's true. Hey, I want to go back to something, though, Cliff. So your competition, what I found fascinating about that chapter was that I started to think about my competition completely differently after reading that. Like, I thought I understood who my competitors were, and then I read that chapter, and it was like somebody freaking opened my eyes for the first time, and I thought about it different than I ever did.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. When people think of competition, they think of the obvious people. I mean, seriously, whenever somebody tells me, hey, Cliff, I got this great business idea, there's no competition out there. And don't get me wrong. I mean, they're wrong, and they're absolutely wrong. Yeah. But I understand how they can come about, because competitors really come in four different flavors. And what somebody like that is saying is, I've looked in box number one, I don't see anybody, and I'm assuming that there's no other competition out there, when in fact there are three other kinds of competitors that you have to think about. And that's what that chapter was all about, is saying you have to look, before you can make the statement that there's no competition, you got to look in all four boxes. And then if you don't see any competitors after looking in all four boxes, look again, because you're probably wrong.
It's called China.
You haven't looked hard enough. Yeah, no, or,
no, it's a
yeah,
or China,
something like
you
that.
Bastard.
That's it, exactly. Or indirect. So, for example, if I have a pizza parlor on my local commercial strip, the Chinese takeout place across the street. Now, that person doesn't look anything like I do. His menu is completely different than mine is. But if you're hungry, you know, you want a quick lunch, you can either have a slice of pizza or you can have an egg roll. And so at a certain level, that Chinese takeout place is my competitor, even though he's not doing pizza.
Yeah. They might have, you know, you want to be hungry in an hour. Or do you want to be hungry till dinner time? You know, how much MSG do you want? But
yeah, there you go. Well, exactly.
I think Jake's going to say something.
But
here.
I am, because this is really one of those things that just blew my mind and got me thinking about things totally different. Right. So you've got this, you've got a competitor grid in the book. And what it does is it's got existing and potential competitors, direct and indirect. And so the indirect one was one that really got me thinking deeply. So it's like, so I'll go back to your pizza parlor. right?
Yeah.
So a lot of pizza parlors would think about the other pizza companies as their competition, not McDonald's. But yet you're both selling food, right?
Yeah.
And then what about the McDonald's that hasn't opened yet?
Food. Yeah, that's the potential competitor. I mean, you're not with a potential competitor. You're not worried about, you know, a mom and pop. You're worried about somebody big, a category killer, a chain restaurant, you know, a big box retailer, somebody who's a lot bigger than you are, who has economies of scale that can just wipe you out. You know, so like that bookseller, the You've Got Mail lady with the bookstore who's having the Borders, you know, come down the street. I mean, how do you compete with that? Sometimes your biggest competitor is not a who, but a what. When I wrote this book, initially, the internet was just, you know, killing category after category, and it still is. You know, are there any technological changes coming around that are going to, you know, make your business obsolete? You know, one of the best pieces of advice I can ever give an entrepreneur is if you're lying awake at nights worrying about how technology is going to make your business obsolete, then you've got to become part of the solution. You know, to kill your existing business and join the next wave, become a technology solution. You know, surf the wave rather than being clobbered by it and being wiped out. You know, I mean, I tell a story, I think, in the book about a couple who had a local bookstore and Barnes & Noble was going to be moving in across the street. This was actually in my hometown of Fairfield. And they just got very, very bright about it. They say, you know what, we're going to get wiped out. So what they did was they called Barnes & Noble and said, you know what, we've been running a local bookstore for 30 years. We're a family business. We know everybody in town. We're going to shut down. Would you hire us as your manager of the local Barnes and Noble when you open it? We want to volunteer to be your manager, your store managers for the Fairfield location. And, you know, Barnes and Noble took them on board there. They knew everybody. You know, when you walk into the Barnes and Noble, there are the people you've bought books from for the last 30 years greeting you at the door. I mean, it was a smart win-win move for both sides. Sometimes the best way to succeed is to put yourself out of business. And that's a message that I actually have in the book. There's a lot of, whenever you're reading my stuff, you're always going to be reading stuff that you're not going to see anywhere else. I don't do the same old small business advice. I want to be able to say something. I was a philosophy major in college, and it shows in everything that I do. I want people to think about this stuff. Well, here's something you haven't thought about. Could you yourself be your own worst enemy? That's chapter 12. You know, what I do is I start with the most obvious enemies, and then I go to chapter 12, which is the last chapter, and it's about against yourself as your own worst enemy. When do you not know how to get out of your own way? That's the worst.
Yeah.
You know, I've reached the point where you're getting in your own way and you're the biggest obstacle to your own success because of your attitudes, because of the fact that you're not willing to get out of the way and let somebody else. I mean, sometimes a business can only grow if you are not the one at the helm. That somebody needs to take over from you. It's a thought-provoking book, which is why it's still in print after, you know, almost a dozen years, over a dozen years now. This thing is still in print and it's still selling because it speaks to something more than just the, well, here's five really cute things you can do in Facebook advertising, you know, that kind of thing.
Now, Cliff, so, you have all these books. I think Jake said 16 books right now.
Right.
Right. So if anybody wants to buy your books, are they going to buy them at, is it a one-stop shop?
No, anywhere the books are sold. I will warn you, some of my books are legal treatises. They're not really meant for the general public. They're meant for lawyers, okay. And you'll see which ones those are. The ones that are $3,000 for a one-year subscription. Yeah, you don't want those.
Yeah, we don't want that. But like Small Business Survival Guide in the crowdfunding book, can they find those on Amazon?
Barnes and Noble, you know, wherever books are sold, you know, I mean, it's not, you know, if you want them autographed, I mean, my autograph is still free. I don't charge for that yet.
Well, you used to work for a public. No, that's not true. You sign legal documents. You charge a lot for those. Yeah, better.
Hey, man, I want mine.
I pay for the autograph. Well, this is what I keep telling my clients. You know, you should pay more for my services because that autograph is going to be worth something on eBay someday. But you know what? Nobody's bought that line so far.
Hey, Cliff. Here's the deal, dude. I am sending you my book and I want it autographed and sent back because you are part of the reason why I'm successful today.
Hell yeah.
Well, thank you, man. I really appreciate that. That, by the way, is what turns me on and that's what keeps me going in this whole business. You know, you ask.
Yeah, you've been married for 34 years, so you need another outlet.
Yeah, what is my
Sorry,
man, you guys,
that was
you guys
a soft
are brutal,
pitch, dude.
Man. You
soft
guys
pitch.
Are brutal.
I'm going to swing every time at those.
But I'll tell you, this is my proudest moment, though, is hearing people like you say that. That's my proudest moment because, I mean, I have this column, you know, that's out there every week, and I have all these books. I mean, I get emails every week from people who, I mean, people in countries I've never heard of who are telling me that I'm changing the way people are thinking about business in their communities. I got an email 2 weeks ago from a guy in Latvia, in Riga, Latvia, you know, the Baltic states near Russia. And this guy sent me an email saying, you know, we're big fans of yours here in Riga. We actually have a club. We meet once a month for dinner at somebody's house. We watch one of your YouTube videos, and then we discuss it amongst ourselves. We're all small business owners in Latvia. And we talk about, you know, are you right? Do we agree? Does this work in Latvia as well as the United States? You know, it's almost like they have a little, like a Cliff Enico fan club. I have groupies in Latvia.
That's amazing.
You know, as a lawyer. I mean, that's an amazing thing. You know, I joke about this. I say there's good news and there's bad news about me. The good news is I'm probably the only lawyer in the United States who has groupies. I am. I'm probably the only lawyer in the United States who has groupies. The bad news is all my groupies look like you two guys. That's my problem.
But I'm bummed.
And I got to work on that. You know?
That's hilarious.
It's okay. We can help you. We because
that's my,
you've
that's,
been
that's
on
my
the,
joke.
You've been on the Beer and Business podcast. The level and the
oh, your,
quality of
your stature just went up
get.
By exponential amounts. Yes. So Cliff, when you and I spoke over a year ago,
be careful.
And I became your client, I'm not giving anything up.
Okay.
Because we got the attorney client privilege thing going on.
Right.
You said something to me, Cliff, and you said that you don't have kids and that you want this to be your legacy. And I just want to tell you, you're leaving one hell of a legacy.
Well, thank you, man. I really appreciate that.
And I mean that from the bottom of my heart.
Yeah.
I mean that from the bottom of my heart. I have learned more from you than anybody else I think I've never met.
Well,
I'm not bullshitting you. I've learned a lot from you.
And I know you're not.
No,
I always tell
not.
People, and I really appreciate that. I always tell people, despite being a legend in my own mind, you know, I'm a good lawyer, but I'm one hell of a teacher, and I am probably one of the best salespeople you will ever meet.
Well, you got my money.
So there's me in a single sentence.
Cliff, I could tell you this. Once Jake told me that we were going to have you on the podcast, every time he just mentions your name as we got closer and closer. He's like a kid in a candy store. He's like, we've got Cliff Enico. We've got Cliff Enico. We have Cliff. And I'm just like, and then as I started preparing for this, of course, you know, I start watching your videos. I start reading some of your blogs, the columns that you write, the books that you're writing. I mean, and I am impressed. And
well, thank
I
you.
Became more excited too. And this is, I got to tell you what, today has been like one of the best Christmas presents under the Christmas tree for both of us.
Well, I hope I do you guys some good. You know, seriously, people, you know, check out my YouTube videos. Check out succeedinginyourbusiness.com. It's an RSS feed, so you can actually subscribe to the column if you wish. It's free. I don't charge for any of this. You know, and I guarantee that sooner or later, you know, you will become a fan. You know, there are things in these books you will not, in these things that you will not see anywhere else. And if all I've done is given you one really good idea, or if I've prevented you from making one really stupid mistake, then I have more than justified my existence on planet Earth.
Well, you've done more than that for this entrepreneur, and I know you've done it for countless thousands of others, I'm forever grateful.
What I like is the way you talk in your videos, the way your public speaking, the things that you do, the way you write your books is very common for the common man to be able to read.
Like us.
It's easy to ingest and it makes a hell of a lot of sense. And there's a lot of light bulb moments. It's like, oh my gosh, I didn't realize that it's that simple.
And we have a lot in common, Cliff, because, you know, one of the things that was very important to us when we started this podcast was we wanted to be able to connect with people and just let them know that success comes from ordinary people just like you and me.
Mm-hmm,
and
that's right.
And if you have the right skills and you have the right people backing you up, you're going to crush it. And to all the entrepreneurs out there
listening. It is not rocket science. It is not rocket science at all.
It's not. It's rocket mortgage, but not rocket science. So anyway, so I have a question. I have one last question. I'm going to put you on the, I'm going to put you in the spotlight right now. So you're talking about getting ahead of the next best thing, as you just said, blockchain. Right. So will you be willing to come back on the show when blockchain finally either bust or booms and talk to us about that and say, I told you.
Of course.
Okay.
Absolutely. I will commit to that. I will definitely, you know, once I figure out what I'm going to say, then you definitely have me. I would love to come back again. And, you know, I'm a big fan of beer.
By then we're going to fly. We understand that there's a couple of co-working office Lear jets that are probably going to be for wholesale really soon. So we may be able to fly you down on the Beer and Business jet and have you come hang out with us in the studio.
Yeah, and we won't put you on Beer and Business 2. We'll put you on Beer and Business 1.
Thank you.
We'll get you on the Gulfstream. Yeah. Well, Cliff, thank you so much for coming on the show, man. This has been an absolute pleasure. I hope you guys have really enjoyed learning from Cliff. Go out and buy his books. Look them up. We're going to post links on our socials to them. But Cliff,
where do we find them right now? Cliff, where do we find you?
You guys are my heroes, man. You are the money hunt of tomorrow, man. I hope you really crush it.
So cliffenico.com, right? That's your legal practice.
That's the law practice site. And then we have succeedinginyourbusiness.com. And then just go on YouTube and search for Cliff Enico, E-N-N-I-C-O, Cliff like in Clifford. And you'll see about 40 things that I got up there. And, you know, they may not change your life. But and also, if you ever need a reference to an to a craft brewery in Riga, Latvia, I have an introduction for you.
There you go. You know what? I might take you up on that.
There we go.
Well, thanks, Cliff. We really appreciate you coming on the show.
Not a problem, man. Good luck to you.
Oh my gosh, Darren, that was so inspirational and so educational. I am really, really thankful for Cliff coming on the show.
You know what? I have to tell you, when you mentioned him, I wasn't sure who he was, but as I researched him, now I see where the excitement came from you. He was fantastic.
Really was.
Wow.
And folks, if you like what you're hearing, I want to ask a couple of things. First of all, make sure you're subscribed to the show. So every time we put out fresh content like this, you're getting that notification. You can be one of the first ones to listen. You could be the smartest person in the room.
You can.
Because you're tuning in first.
You know what?
And you know what? The other thing I want to ask people, share with your friends. We need your help. We want to grow this podcast to be the top business podcast in the world. And we need your help.
And if you don't know how to share, all of them have a little thing that will click and it says share, and you can actually share it through a text.
You can,
which is so cool.
Share
and people
with your
click on the episode and listen, and you just
put it
made
on
their
social
day a hell of a lot better for them.
Yeah, if you're listening in Apple Podcast or Google Podcast or Spotify, iHeart, whatever you're listening to the Beer and Business podcast in, copy that link, put it on your social, send it to your friends, give the gift of edutainment.
That's a Jake-ism right there. Awesome.
You got to get out your Jake-tionary.
You know, we appreciate that.
Yeah,
everything
and
you
please,
guys do.
Please, folks, please go to Facebook and Instagram and follow us, Beer and Business. You'll find us out there. We need you to follow us because social media doesn't like us.
Yes.
So you have to go out and like us proactively. We've been shadow banned because we've talked about big tech.
No, not
we
anymore.
Have.
We haven't been. And it's a long-term relationship. So this is slowly building.
But we have so many more people listening to us through podcast apps than we do following us on social. So we need you. We're not very good at social because we're old. So we need you.
You know, the one thing I almost brought up while we were talking to Cliff was he has a lot of people who submit him questions.
Yeah, and we will answer your questions on the podcast as we just did this week on Questionable Answers episode 7, the holiday episode.
Yeah.
Where Santa called you. Yeah. So if you have questions, you can you can email us podcast@beer.business. You can go to our socials, shoot us a message, private message, doesn't matter. We'll get back to you. We love interacting with our fans, and you guys are so awesome. So keep the questions coming. We could answer your question on air. And if you want to be anonymous, we had two people this week that didn't want their name mentioned when we addressed your question. We will totally respect that.
And the other part is if you have somebody that you would like us to interview on the podcast so you can learn more about them, you can also submit that.
Yeah, there's a link right on the Beer and Business website. Go to beer.business. It's called Be on the Show. We've actually got people that we've interviewed on the show that have gotten on the show by clicking that link. And it takes like, Cody.
Was one of them.
We've got some others coming up. It takes like 60 seconds, if that. It's so easy. So we appreciate you guys in everything you're doing to make this podcast a success. We love you. And you know what? While we were sitting here recording with Cliff, we didn't mention it, but we crossed over. Uh-oh. So we started with Mugshot. Now we're drinking Breakout Stout, a delicious, dark, chocolatey coffee beer from Jailhouse Brewing. And guys, again, get out to the brewery. There's an event this Saturday, the 14th of December, starting at 7, live music with 2BK Original.
Something different. What?
Yeah, 2BK stands for Two Broke Kings. Dude, they're almost sold out. You actually have to get tickets for this one, and they're almost sold out. So they put on a hell of a show. If you're interested in some live music, hanging out this weekend, kind of take a break from your Christmas shopping, just go to jailhousebrewing.com, go to their social page.
Drink some amazing beer.
But for God's sake, just go to the freaking brewery. They're great supporters of the show.
Could you also do us a favor? Because if you're out there, one, when you are drinking a Jailhouse or you buy some Jailhouse beer or some of their merch, they do have some merchandise.
And oh, yeah, I got
we both have a hat, which is awesome.
Hoodies, t-shirts.
Will you do us a favor? Post that on social and like tag us.
And hash brown us.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah. Or wait, no, is it hash brown?
Hash brown.
Hashtag,
those
sorry.
Hash browns fully covered, smothered, chunked, and diced from Waffle House. But anyway, so.
And we are actually recording using incredible technology. We actually pulled Cliff in from, you know, over 1,000 miles away using NASA grade technology in the Beer and Business studio, which is located where, Darren?
Right here in Peachtree City.
Yeah, at Launch and Go Workspace.
Amazing at Launch and Go Workspace. So
yes,
we want to rent out the studio and do a podcast. You want to record your podcast here? You can. You can rent the space for that. Do you know one thing, though? For the people, and I'm going to say this once, for the people who are thinking about doing a podcast but actually aren't sure how to do it, you know, put together one, we have a jumpstart package for those people.
We do. We can even name your podcast because we are branding experts.
So you get to spend an entire day with us. We do a whole
a whole day?
A whole day with...
God, that makes me nauseous.
Well, just you and I, not Mr. Wins.
But, he's too busy.
So, but we can. We can. We'll spend a whole day consulting with you to make sure it's actually relevant before you go spend all the money doing a podcast. And enough about that.
Yep.
Let's move forward. So we do have a couple events here, three coming up, or two here, and then one somewhere else that I would like to mention today.
Okay.
Tomorrow, because I know this is going out tonight, the South Atlanta Business Association, SABA. Tomorrow, it is a lunch and learn. Starts at 11:30 a.m.
Goes How many to dollars?
Free dollars.
I love free dollars.
Bring your lunch. Learn about cybersecurity tomorrow.
Oh.
And have a good time and do a little networking.
Awesome.
And then on Friday.
Oh, I'm so looking forward to Friday. Right,
Friday. Music bingo.
Bingo. Right,
with a
see what I did there?
I got it. I'll pat you on the back later, like when you're walking out the door.
Genius comedy, folks. And
foot in your ass. Get the hell out of here.
Ouch.
So anyway. Friday, music bingo to raise money for the Fayette Care Clinic. Show up 6:30, 7 o'clock is the first call on that first bingo card. The music's going to spin the hits, play the songs, get to find it on the card.
Can I bring beer to that, Darren?
You can't. You have to be 21 or older to show up for this event.
I'm way freaking older than that, so I can bring beer.
BYOB, BYOL.
I'll bring a cooler.
BYOC.
I'm bringing my own cooler.
Okay. And then there's the sparkling.
No, beer.
Hard liquid.
And what's something. Your third event that's not here?
Oh, thank you. Third event, New Year's Eve.
Oh, that's coming sooner than I wanted to.
I know. But a lot of people don't think about it soon enough. So I'm really developing this nice relationship down the road at Revolution Italian. Okay. Great place, great food. I mean,
So good.
You like pork belly?
Only all the time.
Okay. So Matt makes this pork belly dish for dinner will melt in your mouth. He makes this black ink squid pasta that is to die for. But anyway, on New Year's Eve, it is a roaring 20s theme, casino night.
Oh, I'm all in.
Okay. So you got
see what I did there again.
I got you all in. You're so funny.
Jesus Christ.
But anyway.
He's got a podcast with me, people.
He does. I got a podcast with this knucklehead.
He's taking my line. Anyway,
if you are interested and you need something to do for New Year's Eve, it's going to be live music. He's putting a tent over the parking lot. You can... casino night.
Hells yes.
All the chips that you win, you can buy prizes that are being donated from phenomenal local vendors.
Oh, dude.
You know, drinks, dinner.
What time does it start?
Live music. There's three different like dinner seatings. So actually it starts at 5:30. So if you can make it from 5:30 to midnight when has the ball drop.
Oh, I can do it.
Oh, I know you can.
So do you have to go somewhere to register?
You do. Right now, just look for Revolution Italian on Facebook.
Maybe we can link to it from Beer and Business Social. So you need to follow us on social, damn it.
Or you go to Revolution Italian. Just Google it and you go to the website and then click on the link under his events part and you can get there.
Hey, do you think Revolution has computers?
They actually do.
Do you have computers?
I do.
Of course you do, because freaking how do you run a business without computers these days? You can't. It's impossible. Everything's on computers. So if you have computers, you know what you need, Darren? You need Overwatch technology, watching out for all these freaking crazy bastards that are trying to hack in and do all this stuff to your computer, steal your data. So it's an insane world out there.
What's the Putin tip of the day?
Well, let me tell you, first of all, just remember this, overwatch.technology, you need to go there if you have computers, because you're not secure. There's too many thieves out there. Have you ever heard of something?
Hold on one second. I have a question. Why are they going to overwatch.technology?
Because Overwatch combines both antivirus, anti-malware, anti-assware, because these guys are asses. They combine all that stuff with actual human beings that look at stuff.
Yeah.
So they take that extra step to make sure that you're secure.
And they have a big link, a little button on there that says, if you would like a free assessment.
How much is, free is free.
So thanks for playing along, Jake. Now move forward with the rest of that.
Yeah. So here's the thing, dude. Have you ever heard our tech tip this week from Overwatch? Have you ever heard of something called a keystroke logger? No, you haven't, because only freaking nerds think about this shit, okay?
I've heard of keys, I've heard of strokes, I've heard of loggers.
You've heard of strokes, you just haven't had any recently. oh, Darren, I've covered for you, buddy.
No. Just finish
A keystroke logger is a virus, folks. And what it does is this virus gets on your computer and it tracks all the keystrokes you make. So when you're typing stuff in, like websites and passwords.
Uh-oh.
It's tracking it. And you know how it gets on your computer, Darren?
Through your email?
Yeah, like when you get email, we've talked about these bad links you might get in your email in the past couple of weeks. Some of the things that you can get from clicking on bad links are these keystroke viruses, and they are really, really nasty. Those are the things that can get you in all sorts of trouble. So if on your computer you notice when you're looking at websites, you might get, you know, booted to a different page or a different website than what you were meaning to go to, or a pop-up comes up that doesn't seem to make sense, or your computer's slowing down, you might actually already have one of these little bastards on your computer.
How do you get it off your computer then?
Well, just go to overwatch.technology. If you go to Overwatch's website, what they're going to do is they're going to do the free assessment and they're going to find it right away. Then they're going to put a package together for you that will prevent this type of thing from happening again. Even if you accidentally click on one of those bad links, there's ways that they can secure you. This is really nasty, and this hurts a lot of people. And it's one of those things that you never think about until it's happened to you. A keystroke logger. what the F, people? There's actually little Russian, you know,
well, they
jerks
could be from
sitting
other
around.
Places besides Russia.
No, but it's not as fun. I like to pick on Russia because of Putin, you know. So, sorry, Putin, but you can kiss my ass, buddy.
He's got his breadsticks right now. He's happy for at least another 3 months.
It might slow him down, but it's not going to stop him, okay? No. So, seriously, you don't want to think about this kind of crap. You want peace of mind, right? Especially in your business. Don't screw around. Just reach out to Overwatch. And we're going to close today. We got some words of wisdom. And today, Darren, I want to talk about timing. So, Cliff Enico, very clearly when we went through that interview, you know that Cliff has been very influential to me, right?
Yes. Yeah.
I read his stuff. I watched his videos. I watched probably every video he had on YouTube before I started my business. I used to run on the treadmill in the gym and watch his videos.
I'll tell you what. I've been watching his videos, and there are a lot of public speakers when they get up there. And his videos are classroom-style videos, not big audience. So he's not wowing, but there's not a snooze moment on any of those videos.
He
funny,
kills.
Informative, intellectual. I mean,
as you saw
incredible.
Today in this interview, he's great. And I actually became a client of his a year ago because of all the things I learned from him. And I knew I needed him as a business attorney. Now, as you guys know, I had this podcast a year ago. Why did I just get him on the podcast now? Because the timing was right. And this is really critical for you. I did not want to bring Cliff on until the time was mutually beneficial for both of us.
You're talking about because you wanted to be in the Launch and Go studio?
I wanted to be in Launch and Go. I wanted to have a state-of-the-art studio like we have right now. I wanted to have...
Forget that stuff.
Thousands and thousands of subscribers.
The real reason.
So he gets some benefit out of it, as well as us and you, our listener. Timing was critical. I probably could have got him on the podcast back in January and February if I wanted to, but it wasn't the right time. And you got to think about that kind of stuff. There are times when you may want something to happen, but in your heart, you know, timing isn't right. Be patient.
Look at the man who is 5 years it took him to turn a profit and all the bad things that happened, the entrepreneur of the year.
Yeah.
And it finally happened. And you're just sitting there going, when is the timing? When's it going to happen? And he stuck forward and did.
I purposely held back from having Cliff on the show until we got to a point when I felt like we were ready as interviewers. We had the audience to support a guy like that, that we could handle somebody with the level that Cliff brings to the show. And so, guys, timing is sometimes everything. So don't discount that. So Darren,
yeah,
this has been fun.
It has been.
And we have some delicious beers in front of us. Let's finish those off. Guys, thanks so much for tuning in. Support Cliff and his business. We want to remind you, be responsible. Don't drink like 5,000 breakout stouts and try to drive your car because you probably won't even get your key in the ignition.
Like me.
Right. Okay. Get a taxi. Have fun. Get a taxi.
Uber, Lyft.
Yes. And guys, we will see you next week.